How's everyone doing? Okay, we are live on YouTube, by the way, streaming live. Hope everyone is doing well. We'll get started.
Linda, hey, this is Kelly.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, I have a question for you. I received an email that was talking about a new course called Exploring Buddhism that starts September 2nd on Thursday evening.
Yeah, I just saw that too.
Is that a course that is meant to be after this one is completed, or could it be in conjunction with this one?
You know, that's what it sounded like to me. Pindran Law, who will be teaching at least the first module of that, I've attended some similar kind of less official, I guess, teaching with her, and it does go quite deep, but I know that first part is about the mind, and since we've already finished Mind and Its Potential in Discovering Buddhism, it may be that it could be, you know, kind of at the same time, but to be honest, I'm not sure, but that's something I can email Tendrin Law and find out and let you know maybe next week if that works.
Yeah, that would be great.
I was curious about that too, and I had questions about it. It didn't seem, because it also talked about something called basic Buddhism, and I didn't know what that was.
That was my follow-up question, so thank you.
Yeah, I think the basic program is another program that the FPMT has offered. And I can't remember what the email said, if it was replacing that or in between Discovering Buddhism and the basic program. Even though the basic program, it's called a basic program, it's quite in-depth.
The email says if you feel like you're not ready for the basic program, here's this one.
Okay, good. Yeah. So this.
So then I always thought, what is the basic program? Advanced versus this one?
Yeah. Basic is a little. For Westerners, it's a very in-depth program. I haven't done it. Steve could probably speak more to that.
I took a couple of the. Well, Geshe was teaching in some of it, and yeah, basic doesn't mean that. This is like Discovering Buddhism, like an introduction to some of the main components of Buddhism, all the modules. But the basic program is really, I can't remember how many years it is, but it's really in-depth.
I want to say, I think I remember it being like a 5-year program. Does that sound right, Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of monastics take it.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
Cool. All right. I am showing we're at 7:02, so I'm going to go ahead and make a few announcements. The main one is, well, welcome to Discovering Buddhism Module 5. And this is the first class of Death and Rebirth. Steve will be our teacher, and we have this module for the next 5 Mondays of August. So starting today through the 30th of August, we have Death and Rebirth. And then we'll take a break on Monday, September 6th for Labor Day, and then we'll start the next one. So, but not to get ahead of ourselves, so this is a great module. It's one of my favorites. And in addition to the Monday nights in August, though, we have an incredible opportunity to also benefit from another incredible teacher, Venerable Robina Corton, who some of you may have experienced before, but she will be with us teaching virtually on the Wednesdays of August. So this Wednesday, the 4th, the 11th, the 18th, and the 25th. And those classes are from 7 to 9, if I'm not mistaken. And you do need to register for those if you want the Zoom link for that. She's wonderful, and she's teaching on, I don't have the exact title right in front of me, but it's letting go of ego grasping, something like that. So please check the calendar out for that and the website and register. She's absolutely amazing and lots of fun. With that, of course, just a gentle reminder that all of the classes and programs that Kadampa Center offers are offered at no charge. And so if you feel so inclined to share any donations, there's lots of information either online. You can go to donate, which I think is in the top right corner, or on our information sheet, which let me just share that with you real quick and make sure everyone has been able to access that. And actually, I've already gotten a question that maybe you haven't been able to access it. So I'll try to work on that during class. But it looks like this. And so this is the information sheet. And it does have at the very bottom ways to give. And there's lots of different ways. So whatever is your preference, donations are greatly appreciated. So this is the information for this course. And as I mentioned, Steve will be our instructor. The email where you can reach me is here as well. To access the course materials, you do have to enroll in the DB program on the Kadampa Center's website. Once you've enrolled, you should receive an email with the information about a username and password in order to access that information, and instructions on how to do that. And if you have questions about that, I'm happy to help you with that. The online readings can also be accessed from here as well. And then I believe the book that Steve plans on using for this course is Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So with that, I'm going to stop sharing my screen. And Deep, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, and we can begin.
Okay. Thank you. It's wonderful to see you all here on Zoom. Oh, my goodness. I just got really big all of a sudden. Okay.
Thanks. It's your turn.
Just when I had thought I didn't have to do that. So I'm just going to briefly introduce myself because there's a lot of stuff to cover today. And let's see. I want to see how many people this is their first time coming to the class. Linda, do you know if there's any people here for the first time? There, I put it back to gallery. So raise your hand if this is your first time. Okay, thanks, Margaret. Anybody else? So I wanted you're going to get a whole explanation from Linda in a minute about what this exactly is, but you can kind of briefly, you can come into almost any module that we teach in Discovering Buddhism and get a kind of a buffet of everything else that's being offered, because everything kind of leads back to the same stuff. But the main focus, though, for this module is dying and rebirth. So I don't know how many of you know me, but I've been leading DB for a while, and my biggest claim to fame, I suppose, is that Geshe lived in my house for 9 years. Everybody's like, oh, wow. So when he first, I was associated with the Kadampa Center before he came, and then I offered the upstairs of my house to him when he arrived, and so I taught him how to type and how to drive and a little bit of English, and so it was quite an experience. I'll weave some of those stories in now and again. So I don't consider myself, you know, much of a teacher. Can't use that word, but I love learning this stuff again and again and talking with people and answering questions and sharing stories. So we will definitely dive into it. And my feeling is that the topic can be sometimes a little overwhelming for people for different reasons, but we're going to try to make it as empowering as possible, because the thing that I've learned in Buddhism is every single thing you learn is meant to empower you. If it's frightening you, then there's some way that you're misusing it or misunderstanding it. Some things are meant to be like a splash of cold water on your face, but you're the only one who knows when to use that water on your face. There's no one size fits all. So there's lots of different tools in Buddhism to help you train your mind and move in the direction towards enlightenment. That's what it's all about. So if something is hitting you wrong or landing with you wrong, then just talk with me and we'll find a better way to make that become an empowering tool. So Linda is going to lead the prayers, the opening prayers, because what we, as we will talk about in a minute with this topic of death and dying, is that, you know, one thing leads to another. And so our mind state, the way that you fall asleep at night affects your dreams. You know, whether you have a stomach ache or you're very happy or you've had a stressful day, you can't really find the beginning of that mind stream, but you can keep planting things to affect the next moment. And that's why we start with setting our intention, and that's what these prayers are meant to do, is to kind of set our intention so that we can receive the information and think about the information in the most positive way. So Linda is going to do that, and then we will, we'll spend about a few minutes just kind of unwinding from Monday, catching our breath, and then talking about the class.
So Steve, do you want to start with taking refuge and generating bodhicitta? Instructors choose different things. So.
No, tonight let's just do the four immeasurables. Then we'll do taking refuge next week because I want to explain it a little bit before we do that. So
okay.
Yeah. So we can all read this together. If you're shy, you can stay muted. But
it typically works better if only one person is saying it because it's garbled.
Oh. All right. Well, so then mute yourself and say it out loud. It's good to hear your voice as well. So,
right.
Linda, you stay on and say it, okay?
Okay. And we'll repeat the four immeasurables three times. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies.
Thanks, Linda. And now just take a few minutes to get in a comfortable position. An upright position, sitting up with your spine as straight as possible. You can have your eyes gently closed or a little bit open. Your chin tucked down so that your head is not bent on the top of your spine. Your arms out away from your chest. So your breathing can be deeper and deeper. And with each exhale, send out any worries or tension from the day, any extra thoughts, concerns. And with each inhale, try to breathe in crystal clear light of clarity, presence. And take a minute to set your intention for being here tonight. It took effort on a Monday night to set aside time to gather with others and study this topic. So at a minimum, you're wanting to improve or gain knowledge for your own happiness. That you can have less fear, more compassion for yourself and others. Then as you are able, expand that intention, understanding that as you reach your goal, those around you will be positively impacted. And if you understand that we are in this, it's called samsaric cycle of existence, and you set your intention that everything you're doing, including this, will create the causes to be liberated from that cycle so that you can help others do the same. And with that intention, and open our eyes. Next time we'll spend a little more time on meditating, but Linda has a video to show because it's the first night of DB. I don't know, have people seen this a lot before, Linda, or is this?
We do the video, the introductory video at the very first class for each module.
Okay.
So most folks have been with us since the first module, I think. And so, yes, this is normal. So it is about 23 minutes long, and I'll go ahead and start it. Sometimes when I start it, I have to mess around to get the volume and the sound right. So I will work on that. If you can't hear it, just type it in the chat and let me know.
each of us is going to die, from the smallest to the largest animal, from the poorest to the richest human being. In this program, we will examine the fact that all of us will eventually have to face the suffering of death. In this, we are all alike. And the truth is, we don't know when our death will occur. With this perspective, not knowing which of our actions will be the very last in this lifetime, the practice of motivation becomes especially important. Therefore, before you listen to the teachings on death and rebirth, generate in your mind an especially strong thought, a strong motivation, wishing to be able to use every moment of this life in order to make it purposeful and meaningful, in order to eventually be able to liberate all living beings from their suffering and bring them to the happiness of enlightenment.
It is necessary for the spiritual practitioner to reflect upon impermanence and particularly death, the possibility of the inevitability of death and so on. Now, impermanence in terms of the continuum, which is the reflection on death. So when we talk about impermanence in the context here, the primary contemplations are reflection upon three important facts, which are that death is inevitable. So far as the actual eventuality of death is concerned, it is unpredictable. It can strike any moment. And the third is that at the time of death, only Dhamma, one's spiritual practice, will be of benefit. To take an example of our own case, for example, tonight, this night, most of us feel that we'll be alive. However, if you examine this carefully, we may think that yes, I'm healthy. There's no medical or physical conditions that threaten my life. And even if there are external kind of natural conditions such as earthquake, if earthquake were to strike California tonight, I may be able to escape and avoid the danger. So one can conclude quite justifiably that 99% that we will be, you know, alive. However, there is a 1%. We cannot say 100% with guarantee that we will be still alive. So when the phenomenon called death really strikes, at that instance, then no matter how much wealth you have, they are of no significance. Your families and relatives are of no significance. Even the very body that you have cherished and carried and always had with you will be no more. It will be of no use for you. For example, in my own case, while I'm alive, I have friends, I have people to turn to when in need. I can ask people to help me, people are willing to help me and so on. But when I die, at that point, no one can help me. It's me, I myself alone, who has to go on the path, who has to travel. Then the question arises, you know, what then? What then after death? Here, of course, it brings up the issue of rebirth, the question of rebirth. From the Buddhist point of view, rebirth has to be understood in terms of a continuity of consciousness. So one of the sort of the foundational premises of the Buddhist understanding of the possibility of rebirth is understanding the continuity. continuity of consciousness even after death. Buddhists do not accept, do not posit beginning to the continuum of consciousness, and Buddhists explains the nature and existence of consciousness purely in terms of causes and conditions, the principle of causes and conditions. So as the text points out, the question of where you will depart after the death is influenced and determined by your own karmic collections, not only of this life but also your past karmic actions. And and on this point, as Vasubandhu has written, that because all of us will have enormous collections of karma accumulated over many past lives, so all of us will have karmic potentials to take rebirth both in the lower realms of existence and more fortunate realms of existence.
Therefore, it's better not to hear about, better not to think. Yeah, I'll be dying sometime in the future, but that doesn't mean that I need to think about it now. Otherwise, I'll get so sad. So this is very wrong. This is very wrong because it's the opposite way around. We don't want to be saddened at the time of death, completely overwhelmed with fears. With fears, not be able to do anything at the time, is right now that we are alive, that we have to think about it. In this way, if we are able to think about it now correctly and to make the right preparation, it will be like the good child, like for a good child to go back home. We'll experience a great deal of happiness at the time of dying. Even if you're able to recollect Dharma practice, if you don't recollect that and impermanence and that, you won't be practicing anyway. You will be only thinking, oh yeah, I must practice Dharma, but I can do it tomorrow. First I have to do something else, so I can do it the after tomorrow, or I can do it the next year, and so forth. So as Lama Tsongkhapa says, in this way, by thinking, oh, I can do it later, the whole life goes by, and you won't be able to achieve anything. So even if you're able to recollect Dharma practice, you won't be able to practice it. Therefore, if you don't recollect that and impermanence and that, you won't be able to abandon the fantasies related to this life. That means that whatever Dharma practicing you will do, it won't be pure Dharma, it won't become Dharma practice, and your mind will be trapped within the eight worldly dharmas. In brief, no matter what kind of external or internal methods, or wherever I go, whatever I do, that won't prevent me from dying. Therefore, definitely I'm going to die, that is certain. I'm not going to last in this place. Mm-hmm. So think about the causes. Think about the causes that bring, one of the uncommon special causes that result in a precious human rebirth is the perfect practice of morality. So now, check in your mental continuum. As the Kadampa Lama says, if you want to know who you were before, look at the condition of your life now. If you want to know where you're going to be or what you're going to be in the future, look at the condition of your mind now. So this is very true. The uncommon condition of achieving a precious human rebirth is the practice of morality. If those uncommon causes such as morality is not being sown in the mental continuum, there is no way of achieving the result that one wish for.
Even we will be born in a place where we can practice Dharma next life. Then you feel this urgent, you know, not to postpone Dharma practice, but to start from now. So how can I integrate Dharma into my life now to make it meaningful from now on? Because my death can happen at any time.
Try to do the best we can with each moment, and
it makes life much more pleasant and so much more meaningful. And that's the other thing about people who are dying. Then they start to focus on, was their life meaningful? And it's important to focus on that now while we have time to do something about it, rather than wait until we've only got 2 weeks left and we don't have any time to do all the things we really wanted to do. So that's why I guess I'm more motivated now. I want things to stay the way they are. And they can never be that way because they never are that way. So that reality really hit me. I think if people die with a really happy frame of mind, that they have more chance of going to a better rebirth, not going into the lower realms, because it would be so easy to die with fear, and then I'm sure that would be a very good migration, because you look at the animal realm and it's all about fear. All the animals are in fear, so that's very easy for me to believe in the animal realm, because, and being born in the animal realm, because if people die in fear, that's probably where they're going to go. I was with a man who was a fisherman, and you could just see that he had visions, like the Lama say, of all the animals that he had killed. And his eyes were going all over the place, and he was terrified. The other thing is, I tried to get people to generate some kind of love in their heart, you know, love and appreciate for their family. You know, sometimes they don't feel good about themselves. They feel that they've not done nothing good in their lives. And I say, well, you raised children, you raised a family. You've done a good job with this, you know. They should rejoice in what they have done, what they've done that's good in their life. Focus on that. That's the important thing before they die, is focus on the good things. And if they have regrets, then they see those regrets as positive, as something that they've learned in this life, and even rejoice that they've learned that, instead of feeling guilty and, oh, I'm a failure. They should stay positive. There was a man from Burma, and he had a wife and two daughters. And he was looked after by a hospice service in the city, and Amitabha was called in because we're the only service that's Buddhist. So he took his bed, a mattress, and put it in his shrine room in the house. And he put his head towards his shrine, and he told his wife, I don't want much fuss over me. Leave me alone. I've got to concentrate now because I'm going to die. And all the public services who were looking after him never had seen this before, because usually people are so scared and they need so many drugs, especially mental drugs, to calm people down because they're terrified. But he didn't need anything. And all the other workers were so surprised. He doesn't need any drugs. He's so calm. And everybody who came into the house felt so peaceful, so unique, so unbelievable. And his wife and his daughters looked after him. It was like he was in his last retreat before he died. And he was just a model for everyone who came into the house. Everyone spoke so highly of him and had never seen anything so peaceful before.
Wonderful. Thank you, Linda. Any questions immediately from that video before we go on? I'm curious, you know, this is such a weird format on Zoom, so we're going to use the chat a little bit. So let me know if you can find the chat, you know, kind of move your cursor at the bottom, it should come up, and you can click on chat. And I'd like to just to throw out some messages there to make sure that it's to everybody. So you would click on the side of the two. Yeah. Okay. For some reason, Mine is not saying to everybody. Oh, I see. Okay. I have to change that. So let's just put in some things that you would like to accomplish through this class. You know, what are some of the things that you would like to learn or to have a better understanding about? Yeah, just start typing anything that you in particular, because there's different directions that we can go with this material. And I'm curious what some of the goals that you all have for this. And then everybody can see them together. I don't see any yet, unless I'm doing my chat wrong. Here we go. Okay. All right. The concept of rebirth, and I'm interested in learning more about that. To live in a more peaceful state daily, helping others as they move towards death. I would like to be more comfortable thinking about my own death, to understand death. Yeah, these are great, solid, short daily practice. Yeah. I'd like to know more about the different bardos. And, yeah. So, next time I'm also going to have us kind of get into small groups so we can talk a little bit more about your own personal experiences. We all have different relationships with death. We've all had different experiences, encounters, and thoughts and fears and feelings. And it's only natural that we, in our gut, we're going to be a little bit more fearful than leaving a hotel room. So the big difference is that the hotel room analogy, I love that because we don't hold tightly to the hotel room. That's the whole point. We just know, okay, I'm going on to the next hotel room or wherever I'm going next. We leave it with ease. That's the goal. But the difference is that we don't really right now have a preview. We don't remember our last death. We don't remember being in the bardo state before, at least I don't. So fears kind of arise about all this, and that's only natural that that's going to come up in the moment when we're actually leaving our hotel room. If you were leaving a hotel room and just, you know, you didn't know where you were going next, you also might have some fear. If you were being kicked out of the hotel room and you weren't sure where you were going to end up tomorrow night, you would also have some anxiety about it. So part of what this course is about is to get, and the reason I got interested in this topic, which we'll talk about in a minute, is so that we can all become more familiar with the states and stages of dying and the intermediate state so that it is less fearful. And we'll do meditations on it because the whole reason I got into Buddhism was because I wanted to, I'd had some pretty negative experiences and I wanted to know that even if I died a violent death, that I would, I couldn't even frame it. I still can't frame it. I was just afraid of an extremely violent death. And so then all of a sudden something hit me because I had read Gandhi's autobiography when I was in my 20s. And when I was in my 30s, I was having this panic moment of like, I didn't want to die a violent death. And I realized there was nothing I could do to prevent that. I'd already taken martial arts for 5 years. There was nothing I could really absolutely do to guarantee that I wasn't going to have a violent death. But then I remembered in Gandhi's autobiography, he had been practicing forever to be able to say the Hindu word for God at the moment of his death. And then he got the greatest challenge of his life, which was he was murdered. And at that moment, he was able to do that. So it gave me great hope that it was possible. And I mean, I still get like goosebumps thinking about it because I was just flooded with like, oh yeah, there was a human being on this earth and I read his story and he did that. And there were witnesses to it. So the next day I went to the library to try to find something about, you know, him, but also just about how to practice that. I'm walking down the religion and spirituality aisle and I look up and I see the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sogo Rinpoche. And that changed everything for me. I was like, wow, this whole book is on, you know, meditating on these different stages of dying, how to build a compassionate mind so that it comes natural and that it will be with you at that moment of death. So, and I think even for those of us who are aging, and with very obvious signs of aging, we can see that the mind state that we can bring a mind state into this very different body we're living in that has a lot of different changes than it was 10 years ago. I feel like it's the same thing as we get closer to death. If we haven't practiced with that mind, and we're just doing everything to avoid that, as I see some of my friends who are avoiding different obvious signs of aging, it's just that struggle. You know, it's that struggle like when you think you might be drowning. And so that's what we want to avoid. We want to, as everybody was saying in the chat, to be able to be more comfortable with it, to be able to comfort other people, to have some confidence that it's not just something that other people can do, it's something that we can also do, that we can cultivate now. And that same kind of practice that we will use in this course on death is something that we can use in lots of things, because everything that comes together goes apart. And so there has to be certain components, and this is where the whole idea of emptiness really comes into play in the topic of death and dying. And it's way more than we'll even have to cover in these five classes, but I'll give you little kind of introductions to all of this so that it starts to fit more and more together. But we have deaths all day long. They're just not as dramatic. They're not going to be as earth-shaking unless we have a lot of feelings about it. So, for example, this class has all these different components to it so that it's able to hold the label of discovering Buddhism, right? If I was just sitting here talking to a blank screen with nobody watching me, it really wouldn't be able to hold the label discovering Buddhism. So it needs me, and it needs a bunch of you, and it needs the laptops and the computer and all these different things that have come together so that it will hold this label of discovering Buddhism, class one. And that's an analogy to yourself, the aggregates and the parts of yourself that are able to hold the label of your name, of you. So at the end of this class, none of us are probably going to freak out that this class tonight has died and is going to be reborn next week. The way that this class ends will definitely affect its rebirth, right? If it just gets all of a sudden our screens go black, we didn't even have a chance to say goodbye or finish our sentence, it might, you know, affect how we start next class. We might start by apologizing and, you know, reviewing some material and trying to make sure that doesn't happen again. If we end the class pretty much on time so that I don't annoy people, and it's a pretty good experience, that will also affect the next class, the next rebirth. So I guess I'm challenging you to think about things in your life that are little deaths all the time, because you can use each of those to practice the same ideas that we're going to be talking about in this class. The book that I want to use is Advice on Living and Dying, because I've taught this, I think you can see it here, I've taught this class a few times, and it's so tempting, there's so many different directions you can go in, that the reason I like this book is it uses a prayer by the first Panchen Lama, and I memorized that prayer years ago because it covers not just the topics that we heard about in the video today, but then it goes into the details of the stages of dying. And Geshe-la taught me those stages, and I meditate on them regularly. And I remember asking him and his teacher, so the point of this practice is to have no fear. And they said, no, the point of the practice is to be familiar, so that you're very familiar with the stages of dying, because we're not, you know, in those stages right now. And so that you can recognize what's going on as you're in the process of dying, and cultivate the mind states that you want to cultivate, so that they're not frightening, so that you know what's happening. That's considered a good death. So that's a lot of what we're going to talk about. Some of the stanzas of the poem are really kind of a repeat of what you saw in the video. Those things are really powerfully important. Almost all of Buddhism starts with, almost all the topics in Buddhism have this formula of meditating on the advantages of, in this case, meditating on death, the advantages of meditating on death, the disadvantages of not meditating on death. It's to kind of get through that layer of, why am I doing this again? To really kind of get deep into your mind wide open. This is why I'm doing this. And to challenge yourself throughout the day. So then we'll move on to some of the stanzas that really get to the stages of death and the intermediate state. So I just want to read you a couple of things here, and then I'm going to share my screen. And so if you haven't bought the book or you're not going to buy the book, don't worry. I'm going to at least have printed out the stanzas that I'll share on my screen each week. But I really encourage you to take a look at the book and see if you can even get it reduced in paperback form somewhere, because it's such a compact book that covers so much territory. And so then after we've studied this, you'll still be able to go back and go, right, that's what that stage of dying, death and dying is. And that's that intermediate state, okay? So the first Panchen Lama's 17 stanza poem is a guide to specific Buddhist techniques for overcoming fear of death and for potentially utilizing the stages of dying for spiritual advancement. It's my hope that, and this book was written by His Holiness, it's my hope that this description of the inner psychological experiences and physical changes will provide helpful reflection for those concerned about death and the deeper levels of the mind, and that it will serve as a source of information for scientists interested in working with Buddhist scholars and yogis on issues around dying. The first seven stanzas of the poem explain how to approach death. After an initial stanza, okay, stanzas four and five speak to adopting a perspective that can handle both the overwhelming suffering that can accompany the time near death and the delusions that appear while dying. So we're going to go into that in detail about what kind of appearances arise when you're actually in the active stages of death. But also the just as you heard that ambulance driver talking about, you know, we don't know what kind of death we're going to have, but some of the suffering and the fear can be reduced by understanding the mind states that arise before that, right? So that's what the first parts of the poem will really get at. Stanzas 6 and 7 prescribe how to achieve the most favorable conditions for death by remembering what to practice and remaining joyful. The next three stanzas describe the length of the appearances that occur during the first four stages of dying and how to meditate through them. And then the other stanzas get into the intermediate state, and we'll get there. But it takes you through this kind of journey of like why we're doing this, to even the actual states, how to meditate on those states now. And it's not that hard. We will do that together if that's something that really interests you all, which it seems like it is. So I'm going to share my screen and bring up the first three stanzas because we don't have a whole, this class isn't that long. Yeah.
I have a quick question. So Steve, the book that you showed is called Advice on Living and Dying, but the title that is popping up is a different title. Do you know for sure if it's the same book and it was just a different, like a newer?
So I have Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life.
Yes. Okay, good.
Okay. All right. And it should say somewhere pretty quickly in there that this is based on that poem.
Okay.
I think I have like, oh, it's backwards. But
yeah, that's the one. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure it was the right book.
Yeah, I think this is an early edition, so it might look.
Maybe the cover is a little different. All right, thank you.
Good. I'm glad you asked. All right, so can you check the chat to make sure
there's another edition called Mind of Clear Light and Living a Better Life.
Okay.
They changed the title because I have the audiobook of the one you said. It's originally was called Mind of Clear Light, Advice of Dying and Living a Better Life, but they're the same book.
Okay. Yeah, the key will be when you look to see if the Panchen Lama's poem is in there. That's the key. And then, you know, look, it's pretty small and compact, and uses that poem to focus the entire text, the entire book on. And that's what I'd like to do in this class too, is use all of this time and our thoughts on, we can focus it on this. It covers everything. All right.
Only two, one thing I see now in Amazon, the art cover is like your.
Oh.
And if you have the paperback, it's another cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just want to answer one of these questions. I assume we're karmically connected to others we know. Is it known that these connections continue into next lives? Yeah, we wouldn't know exactly which ones or how, or, you know, but definitely, you know, nothing arises without a cause. And so we are connected to everybody that comes into our lives, and even lots of people who don't. But nothing arises without a cause. So we have created the causes to know each other and to know the people in our lives. And the way that this should be an empowering thought, when we're talking about karma, the thing to remember is the whole point is that you are creating seeds now. So your energy should be going into what can I create now? If I have a difficult relationship with somebody at work, you know, the way that looking at karma helps me understand that is that this didn't necessarily arise out of nothing, right? It's not just coming, it might feel like it's coming out of the blue, but there's some seeds there that are ripening. Now, what do I want to plant in there now that I have the power to do that? So just constantly kind of training yourself to think, what is the empowering part of Buddhism to use in this? You know, we are connected to each other most definitely through past karmic connections. What can we do now to create, again, the positive moving forward? All right, so I'm going to share my screen. Let's see if I can do this right. Huh. I don't see, usually, Linda, when I share, never mind. Okay, can everybody see this?
Yes.
All right. So the title of the poem is Wishes, they have long titles, Wishes for Release from the Perilous Straits of the Intermediate State, Hero Releasing from Fright. Okay, and again, the first bunch of stanzas are all about, you know, preparing to think on this topic and the kind of mind state we want to have moving forward. So the first stanza is always going to be, you know, setting the intention and going for refuge and creating the right mind state. And so the stanza is, I and all beings throughout space and without exception go for refuge until the ultimate enlightenments to the past, present, and future Buddhas, the doctrine and the spiritual community. May we be released from the frights of this life, the intermediate state, and the next. And one of the things that this reminds me of is, you know, may we be released from the frights of this life, the intermediate state, and the next, is typically we have, as human beings, we're just trying to get through one thing, like, okay, if I can just, you know, get through college, then everything will be okay. And now at this point in my life, it's kind of like, okay, if I can just have a good death, then everything will be okay. But, you know, then there's another life. When I think about that, I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I remember listening to someone in my family like, oh, I feel like my daughter finally got off to college. I feel like I'm done now. I can stop worrying and, you know, all the parental responsibility. And I just kind of laughed like, really? You think that's over? You can just hang up your hat now? I don't think it works that way. And same thing with us. It's like, oh, this life. Oh, the intermediate state. Oh, the next. And so this helps us generate the wish to be released from the frights of all of these things, that it's not just this thing that we have to get through. You know, that we're really trying for the complete ultimate enlightenment. Stanza 2, may we extract the meaningful essence of this life support without being distracted by the senseless affairs of this life. Since this good foundation, hard to gain and easy to disintegrate, presents an opportunity of choice between profit and loss, comfort and misery. So I love just some of the word choice in here, you know, this life support.
That's one way of looking at our lives and our bodies. It's not our, you know, it's not the entirety. You know, it's your hotel room. So sometimes the question arises, and Linda, if you can keep an eye on the chat in case there's other questions coming in, and certainly, you know, feel free to unmute yourself and ask me, but without being distracted from the senseless affairs of this life. Some people have asked, you know, what does that mean? That doesn't mean, I guess the critical thing to remember and to try to define for yourself is, what are senseless affairs? This life is not a senseless affair. Let's just be clear. That's not that this life is a senseless affair, or you need to remove yourself from the affairs of this life. It's more about how do you bring kind of the right focus that you want, so that the affairs of your life are not senseless. I don't know how many of you read Carlos Castaneda back in the 60s and 70s, but he talked a lot about using death as an advisor, and that, you know, if death was sitting right next to you, death would advise you on whether or not that was really the last thing you wanted to do in your life, going to this event or saying this thing or whatever it was. I feel like it's very similar to this, you know, not to be distracted by what you would define as senseless. One of my favorite quotes is from this Zen teacher who said that renunciation doesn't mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. And in that way, I think that's the same thing about meditating on death. This world that I am living based on this life support and my current connections and my experiences will go away. And so it doesn't mean that I have to go away from the world in order to be cultivating the right mind states. It means that I need to just constantly remember that this world goes away, that things are impermanent. So not that it's to freak me out, but so that I can use them well. So one other thing I want to share, I was coming back from, there were a couple of years where I was just overwhelmed with impermanence. My mother was very ill and dying of vascular dementia. She had to leave New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina and come live with me. And so, you know, we just lost our city, or she lost her, you know, where she grew up and where I grew up. And now I was watching her kind of mental state and personality decline. And then I went to D.C. to help my elderly uncle. And that was really hard. And so when I came back, I was asking Geshe-la for an antidote to all the difficulties of seeing so much impermanence. And he said, oh, that's easy. You have to meditate on what arises. So I was just in a deep meditation on what disintegrates. But without impermanence, you know, enlightenment is impossible. Without impermanence, you know, anything good is impossible because it can't arise. So I was just looking at one end of it. But to remember that, it really helped me later on when my mother was in a nursing home, and I would go into that nursing home and people were in all these terrible stages of decline. But I would try to see each one of them as actually kind of in the stages of labor, of giving birth to something else that I couldn't see. So if I thought of that as labor pains, would it look the same way? I mean, if some alien being landed on Earth and was watching a woman in labor and didn't know what was coming, that being would report back to their planet, you know, like, oh my God, so this woman's in so much pain. And but, you know, she knows what's around the corner. So what's harder for us, I think, in our watching some of these impermanent states and this suffering is that we don't see what's around the corner. And so it would be easy for me walking to the nursing home just to see this massive amount of impermanence. But viewing it with just a little bit different helped me get through that a great deal. So, and also feel like it helps me in watching my own aging. Okay, stanza three. May we realize that there is no time to waste, death being definite, but the time of death indefinite. What is gathered will separate. What has been accumulated will be consumed without residue. At the end of a rising comes a descent. The finality of birth is death. So these you know, I just wanted to get three out there, and we'll do the next three next week. These are meant again to kind of remind us that we, to empower us to remember that we have this moment. However fleeting the moment is, there's so much merit you can create in just 10 seconds. And sometimes we think we've got to do all these things to create, you know, this merit that might help us do it. You can actually, you know, develop so much merit in just 10 seconds of rejoicing. When you watch the news and see somebody who saved somebody's life, rejoicing in that. There's so many ways. And so what I want to challenge you, your homework for this week, is to think of two things for homework. Is to think of small deaths or, you know, falling apart that you encounter throughout your day or through your life that you can practice with. Okay. And the other one is to think of ways that you can generate merit. And what we're talking about merit is, you know, just something positive, a positive act. And the acts are by the three gates of body, speech, and mind. So, you know, they're most powerful when they're all put together. So, you know, you open the door and you imagine, but you have to use your mind. So you can do all these prostrations, but if you're not using your mind, it doesn't mean anything. It's just exercise. So, but combined, so say I'm helping somebody, you know, I love to rescue worms. I don't know, when I was a kid, I loved worms. So when I walk down the sidewalk, I'm just throwing worms back into the grass, you know, that's something that I'm doing with my body. I might like say something, it might be with my speech and with my mind. Okay, may I'm hoping that something positive for them, you know, I'm saving their life. May they, now that they have heard this little mantra that I'm whispering over them, may that ripen in some future life for them. But it could be anything. You know, it could be anything. Saying hello to somebody at work who I know is having a tough time and I'm wishing them well. That's something I'm doing with my body, speech, and mind. But certainly you can do stuff with your mind all day long. So think of some things that will be easy to do to increase your happiness and well-being and merit. And now we're going to, I want to give us a break and so we can end a little bit early. And, but before I do that, are there any questions or anything in the chat that I need to look at?
I don't see anything in the chat, Steve, on YouTube. And those of you streaming live on YouTube, feel free to leave questions and comments in the chat on YouTube as well.
Okay. All right. So now at the end, what we do is we, just like it's the two bookends for any kind of practice, and it can also be the two bookends for your day. You know, the starting off by setting your intention and kind of directing how you want this to go. And then at the end, you know, rejoicing that you accomplished. You know, you were here, you were present, you're participating, you were watching, you're thinking. Congratulate yourself on a Monday for doing all of this. Next week, we'll get into some Zoom rooms for a little bit of time to talk a little bit about the homework. We'll go over some of the other stanzas in this book. If you, let me know if you have trouble getting the book. If you haven't, I'll you know, put the next few stanzas up online, and then I can get that available to everybody. All right, so let's take a minute to just close our eyes and think about the merit, again, the positive that you created by attending, by thinking about this topic, by setting aside time, by generating the wish to overcome fear, to help others at the moment of death, to help others as they think about this topic. It's what we all share. Just as we share breath, we all share our pending deaths, our immortality. And then imagine that this merit that you have created is a handful of seeds. And now you decide where those seeds are going to be planted. And when you plant them, when you dedicate them, They are not lost. And one way to dedicate them is to imagine that you are joining them with all the other positive merits, positive seeds that all beings have created, that all the high teachers and bodhisattvas have created. You're joining your merit with theirs and dedicating it for your complete and ultimate enlightenment. And on that note, I thank you and hope to see you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Take good care.